Curtain up theater people, and welcome to your program Is Your Ticket. Now normally we come to you from the Hell's Kitchen area of Midtown Manhattan, but tonight's show is being brought to you from the beautiful city of Fairhope, Alabama. My name is Sean Chandler, and I'll be your host. Your program Is Your Ticket is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. As many of you know, your program Is Your Ticket is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater in smaller, more intimate productions. It's these works we like to highlight, and it's our goal on this show to feature as many of these productions as possible while still discussing the biggies. I love theater and see as much as I can wherever I go. During the travels of the production of my husband and my play At the Flash, I've met many wonderful people from all over the world in the theater community, and it is my honor to bring them on as guests to the show. Tonight's guests are two major talents from Theater 98, the local theater community here in Fairhope, Alabama. They are two of the company's actors and directors, John Robitaille, and the director of their current smash hit, the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, Robin Ann Page. Now, before I bring them on, I thought it would be great to give a little history on the development of the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. That is a mouthful of a name, I'll tell you. Now, on your program, Is Your Ticket is devoted to, among other objectives, theater and development, and the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee had a terrific journey as it developed into what it has become. The music was based upon crepuscule, and that is spelled C-R-E-P-U-S-C-U-L-E. I think that's how you pronounce it, crepuscule. And that's big letters with dashes in between as if you're spelling it out. And it's an original improvisational play at the time, created by Rebecca Feldman and performed by The Farm, which is a New York-based improvisational comedy troupe. So it was eventually, you know, developed from improv, which is really cool. Now, Sarah Salzberg, who originated the character of Logan Schwartz and Grubenair, was Wendy Wasserstein's weekend nanny. Now, Wendy Wasserstein, you may know, and if you don't, let me explain it to you. She wrote a play that was eventually, I think, made into a movie called The Heidi Chronicles. And The Heidi Chronicles won a Pulitzer Prize and lots of Tonys, and it was just a sensational show. And by the way, if you're ever interested in reading a biography on a playwright, there's a biography about Wendy Wasserstein called Wendy and the Lost Boys, and it's terrific, and it was written after she sadly died early and young. But anyways, back to Spelling Bee. Sarah Salzberg, who was Wendy Wasserstein's weekend nanny, was in the original production of 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, and Wasserstein recommended that William Finn, who wrote the music and lyrics, see the show. Finn brought Rachel Shenkin, on board, and I believe she went on to win a Tony Award for the book, and they worked together with Rebecca Feldman to transform Crepuscule into a scripted full-length musical. Spelling Bee was then workshopped and developed at the Barrington Stage Company in Massachusetts. They develop a lot of stuff there. In February 2004, a workshop was done in which a first act and parts of a second act were created. This stage of the process was directed by Michael Barakiva and Feldman. That would be Rebecca Feldman. The script was fleshed out and the show was given a fuller production in July 2004 under the direction of Feldman and Michael Unger. Now, several cast members, including Dan Folger, who I believe won a Tony for playing his role, Jay Reese, who also added material into the show, I believe, as it was developing, and Sarah Salzberg, remain from Crepuscule, and were later joined by Rob Sapp, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, you probably know him from Modern Family, Celia Keenan Bulger, who's in a lot of TV, and Lisa Howard and Deborah S. Craig were added, and a full script was created. The musical opened off-Broadway at Second Stage Theater on February 7th, 2005, and closed on March 20th, 2005. Now, normally when a show closes that fast, it's usually because maybe it's not doing very well, but in this case, I think they fast-tracked this show directly onto Broadway because it won the 2005 Lucille Lortel Award for Outstanding Musical and the 2005 Drama Desk Award for Outstanding Ensemble Performance. Very cool. Spelling Bee premiered on Broadway at the Circle in the Square Theater on April 15th. It ran for 1,136 performances, two of which I saw, so there we go, and won the Tony Awards for Best Book, Rachel Shenkin, and Best Featured Actor, Dan Folger, who plays a character whose name I'm not going to reveal because it's a great name in the show, and see the show and you'll know why. Since then, it's had productions all over the world. There have been multiple performances here in the U.S. as well as international productions in London, Australia, Norway, and Tel Aviv. So what started as an improvisational work has developed into a sensational international hit, and I wanted to highlight that so folks can understand the process a little better about how a show starts and grows. And now here it is, delighting the audiences of Fairhope, Alabama, and it has been a smash, so much so that performances have been sold out, and I believe you've added two extra performances?
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Add more.
I would love to add more.
So let's bring on our guests to talk about the production and also the historic Theater 98, because it's been around for a while. So folks, please welcome to the show two of Fairhope, Alabama's Theater's 98 actors and directors, John Robitaille and Robin Ann Page. Hi, John and Robin, and welcome to your program, Is Your Ticket.
How are you?
I'm great.
Great. Thank you so much for having us and coming all the way out here to visit us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I should explain that my sister lives out here, and so I've driven by this theater so many times, and it has so intrigued me. And I just took a tour, and what looks to be like a small building is just feels like a great, expansive, wonderful theater. So tell us a little bit about Theater 98. Give us a little bit of a history.
It is a wonderful space. You have to understand the building was built in the 1920s as the First Baptist Church of Fairhope.
Wow.
From that point, as the church grew and moved to other locations, it became a satellite courthouse for the county. And in the, I guess, the early 80s is when it became a playhouse. It was another company that was founded. Playhouse 813 or 815 was the original playhouse here. They are the ones that converted it into the space that we have. We took it over as Theater 98 around 1985 and have been here ever since. And it has provided a wonderful atmosphere for shows. For those, obviously, a lot of people here in this have probably never been here before, but the theater is designed where the seating is on three sides of the stage. There are three rows for each side, so the audience is pretty much right into the actual action that is happening on the stage. You feel like you are a part of the show when you watch a show here.
Absolutely.
We're in the theater right now, and it feels... It's strange because it has an intimacy to it, but it feels very open. It feels like an actor. I mean, I've been in smaller theaters, and it sometimes it feels like the actors are right on top of you.
Mm-hmm. Now, or like a black box or
right,
something like that.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And in here, it feels like the actors have a lot of room in which to do the show and to play. And Spelling Bee is a pretty active show.
Right. And it's amazing how we're able to make different sets for these different shows, because you think nothing could possibly fit in here, or we couldn't make it work in a thrust stage situation. But each and every show has a very unique set and structure to it, and each one is very exciting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, are all of your shows done in the U-shaped theater?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Tell me a little bit about your current season that you have, that ongoing shows for this season that you've already done, anything you have coming up.
Sure, absolutely. Well, Putnam County Spelling Bee is the fourth show of the season. It is our last show for this season. So we started out this year with a new production, relatively new, called Ripcord. Then we moved into On the Verge. And then the show right after that was Becky's New Car. Hmm. And then, of course, now back into Putnam here. And so it's been a very unique season for us in the fact that a lot of the shows have audience participation in them.
Wow.
I know the last two have. And I don't know what else to say other than... I've enjoyed this season very much.
Yes, and what's real exciting is this is the first musical that Theater 98 has done in a very, very long time, and it has been obviously well received since we're held over and sold out.
Sure.
And the patrons love it, and it's enticing people to become season ticket holders again and new ones for next year, which is exciting.
Wow.
Who doesn't love a musical?
Right, exactly. It's exactly. I read a review, I think, that you posted, Robin, over the last day or two. Or someone posted it, and on Facebook, and it was by a reviewer who said, all of a sudden, I looked over and I realized that somebody was actually playing music.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's a very, very cool thing to read and to say, because it's like the music is there, and it's highlighting the show and it's emphasizing the show.
Yes.
And they're so, you know, they're being carried away by the story.
Mm-hmm.
And the pathos of the show and what's going on.
Exactly. And we've had our wonderful musical director, Rick Raymond, and his wife happens to be the accompanist, Terry Raymond.
Oh, great.
And she's playing an electric keyboard that has many, many sounds to it. She's recorded different sounds in it. And he stands by and plays a little percussion along with her. So it really has a very, very full sound to it. And that's what I wanted. And that's what we got.
That's really cool.
It's good.
It's so nice what technology can do. You mm-hmm. can get drum sounds out of there if you need to.
Right.
That's terrific. And tell me some of the things that your audience are saying about the show. What's the audience feedback been like? Comments you've heard?
Well, it's pure entertainment. They've enjoyed it so much. They've laughed. They've cried. We have poignant moments in the show. As you know, you've seen it a few times. And we have a cast that is literally Broadway bound. These kids and adults that we have in the show are unbelievable. And three of which I know are going on to pursue this as their career.
Excellent.
And the voices are phenomenal. I was very blessed to have wonderful people audition. And I think we cast it really well. And what was your question? And again, I'm sorry, I just...
What was the audience saying?
Oh, what are the audience saying?
Reacting,
yes.
Like,
so they're just walking out going, I enjoyed it thoroughly. And a gentleman came up to me last night and said, he kissed my hand. And he said, I enjoyed this so much. I'm a season ticket holder. And I told my wife, a spelling bee, I don't think will last. We'll definitely leave it intermission. She was actually, his wife was one of the audience participants who came up in the first act to join the spellers on stage and did
fun.
A great job.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I so thoroughly enjoyed every moment. Of course we stayed, and we'd like to come back. So that was a really wonderful compliment and
sure.
a testament to the show.
That's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. One of the things I love about the show is it satisfies what I call the three E's. It's entertaining. Mm-hmm. It's funny. It has such a great energy to it. It's educational. You learn something about spelling bees, and it's edifying.
Mm-hmm.
There are moments in the show that are so uplifting. It has great themes of you know what the not just the kids but the adults are bringing into the spelling
right.
bee, and how they're it goes into how they cope.
Mm-hmm.
With the people that they're becoming. And one of the things that I love about it is that the kids help the adults understand it and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's what enticed me so much to direct this show was because each of the characters, the six students in the show, all come from different backgrounds, different family dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
They're so, I don't know how to explain, we bring it out and we get a chance as audience members to learn about each one of these kids.
Right.
And it's just a beautiful thing. And it's a chance for us as audience members to really learn and remind ourselves what impact we as adults have on kids. That it's so important to what we say and what we do and what we teach them, our teachers, our clergy, our parental units, whatever they may be,
sure.
have such a huge impact on the way they live their lives and go on. And this show shows so much of that. And it's really exciting. And I also love the fact that there's so much, you know, you said that... Crepuscule started out as an improvisational type of...
Did I say it right? Crepuscule?
Well, you know what?
Crepuscle is what I thought it was.
Crepuscule.
Crepuscule.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's so many different ways. But anyway, every night it seems to be something different.
Exactly.
But there's so much opportunity that the writers have given us to add to their script, to improvise and change every night. And because we have four different audience members of all different ages come come on the stage every night, you never know what it's going to be. So our actors are just set for any possible change. Someone may get a word correct and someone may get it wrong. And we have to be ready to change around the whole script and see where we go from there.
Absolutely.
So it keeps us on our toes.
Now, did you work with the cast on improvisation to be able to acclimate to that?
Well, it was a little bit of a prerequisite when I auditioned them. How much have you done with improvisation? And we had them do a little bit of that at the audition. And they have really stepped up to the plate. And of course, our monitors, both Rona, Lisa Peretti, and Punch, they every night have to come up with things to say about the audience members. We have little funny lines and the different spelling words at times. And the funny different ways we can give definitions and sentences for those words.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's fun.
To me, I don't know how they do it. I don't know how people who do improv do it. It's just such a difficult skill, thinking on your feet. And I remember I did a show with a hip-hop improv group. Now, you'll hear it when you hear your own show, because mm-hmm. they've actually done an opening and a closing for me, which was really nice of them. But I was going through in my intro topic on the history of improv, and there's like 10 rules to improv.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important thing is to always say yes.
Mm-hmm. John Robitaille here is, he has
I
put
teach
together,
improv.
He teaches improv,
yes.
And he's become the improv guru of Baldwin County.
Well, and Mobile, for that matter, Mobile, because yeah. there was no improv when I moved here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's such a great art form. I think people, not necessarily just actors, but people in everyday life need that kind of training.
Yes.
It helps them with anything that they do in life.
It's a backbone, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The name of the company is North Coast, and they're actually a hip-hop improv group.
Mm-hmm.
And they operate out of New York and Chicago, but they give lessons as well, and they give lessons to corporations. And they say that it helps people with their communication skills, public speaking skills, being able to handle themselves better in meetings, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what it does is it gives you confidence on your feet.
That is the key right there, is to gain that confidence. Once you have that, you can pretty much do anything that you want to do,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm myself, like I said, I'm not very good at improv. I tell a story where I took an acting class, two acting classes. I did it for empathy as a writer. I'm not a very good actor at all, but I'm a relatively decent writer. And I remember we did theater games in the first acting class, and my acting teacher, whose name is Barbara Tarbuck, she's passed away, she said, okay, what we're going to do now is you're all going to be kids on the playground, and you're just going to play with each other. So I couldn't do it. I really couldn't. So I walked over to the side of the room and I sat there with my arms folded. And she walked over and she said, "Don't you want to go play with the kids?" And in my most adult voice, I said, "No." So I can see, I mean, just to really pull that out of people is tough.
Yeah. Now you have to get outside yourself and just become the character and become one.
But you do realize what you did in that class was typical of children on a playground, too. One of them would go into the corner, and if they didn't get their way, and just sit there and
sulk and say no.
Sulk and say no.
I'm not playing.
I'm not playing. So, you know, what you did, if I was grading that class, you would have passed just for that.
Would I?
Yes.
You were halfway there.
Oh, my God. Well, let's hope that my acting was better than my improv in that class, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Theater 98. Are there any particular messages and themes that speak strongly to you and the team here at Theater 98 in the projects that you select to produce?
I don't know if there's necessarily any theme that we go for. What we look for mainly is the entertainment value, obviously, for our patrons to come in. You know, the worst thing we could do is to pick a show that's going to bore them so much that they get up and leave at intermission. We want them to stay for the full production, obviously. So we look for that entertainment value in there. And there's also things that we look at, too. We know that they're going to like a comedy. A mystery is always a good selection. A musical will always entertain people. So, you know, we try to. We do four shows a year. So you've got to understand our slate is very limited. but we want to try to pull a little bit of each in there.
Make it diverse. And
exactly, yeah. So that you're not getting the same thing. Because I know that there are theaters out there that specialize in musical theater, and that's all they do. But you know what? There are some really good stories that may be very dramatic that you're not, you probably would maybe get a chuckle out of there and you don't laugh, but it has a deep message at the end. And that's things that, you know, I as a director, or if I wanted to tell that story, I would hope that I could pull it off in this kind of environment.
Mm-hmm. So we'll go from something like John directed Glass Menagerie last year, and mm-hmm. and then it went from there into right before that we had done Plaza Suite that I had part in directing. And we have a diverse audience too, and of all ages. We started out with a little more of an elderly crowd, and we're slowly branching into just every age and every type. We try to stay out of political things, religious things, and you know, all of that. We just kind of stick to pure entertainment that's different from each show before.
If I may ask, why do you try to stay out of political and religious themes?
You have to understand the dynamics. You're in the South, mm-hmm. and religious themes are, you know, that's taboo to a lot of people. And they would get upset over the slightest things. I know, you know, Robin, when she was directing this show, you know, there was some nervousness about the Jesus scene. You know, mm-hmm. would we offend somebody if Jesus came out? And, you know, so you it's always in the back of your mind.
Mm-hmm. And it's done with respect. And
right.
it's not done in, you know, I don't know how to explain it. You just never know who you're going to offend. I did take out, there was some swear words in it where they take God's name in vain and so on. And because we're in the Bible Belt, I made sure to just change that to gosh darn it. And, you know, things mm-hmm. like that, just to appease the audience. We do have things that are a little, you know, it's adult content and so on. And so
it's funny that the things that you think that they're not going to say anything about, you'll get that phone call the next day, and like I was really offended by that, and I was like, that,
you know, yeah, you just can't even imagine.
Right.
So we kind of are on a fine line here,
you know, and I'm glad that you said that, because I think in like in New York and Chicago and mm-hmm. LA, we're in a theater bubble.
Sure.
And in New York, it's kind of like anything goes for theater.
Absolutely.
And probably even more so in Chicago. They're very much an incubator for new theater and avant-garde theater and risky theater. So I think it's really important that we as theater lovers all over need to understand that it's important to pay attention to that,
mm-hmm.
I think,
mm-hmm.
personally. So I would assume your team is always kind of walking that fine line. It's like how much can we push the audience mm-hmm. a little bit here while still entertaining them and retaining
right.
them?
Exactly.
And so there's probably a lot of discussion about that when you're planning your next season.
Quite a bit.
Yes.
We have a play reading committee that pretty much meets the entire year. You know, we start out with some selections and we start narrowing it down, and you look at that. And when I serve as production manager for the board, you know, part of me reading through the scripts is to say, well, you know, we can do that physically on the stage or not, but looking at, okay, how is the story going to be interpreted by the audience? And a lot of it could be simple stuff, but they don't see it the same way, you know.
And it can be frustrating at times.
It is,
you know,
frustrating.
Very frustrating.
It really is.
Because there's so many, like you say, avant-garde, really edgy things we'd love to do and produce here. And I just don't know that our season ticket holders. So we're gradually moving in that direction a little bit, little steps at a time.
Right. And in addition to that, there's also the concept of, you know, we're dealing with grown adults here,
mm-hmm.
and people who have had lots and lots and lots of life experience. So it's also not insulting their exposure to life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I would assume it's a lot of second guessing about culture. And that must be like I said, that must be really difficult for you.
Well, it's really frustrating for me. I'm from California, and I've been an actress you know, regional actress and in California for many years. And coming here was a rude awakening. It's very, very different. And
sure.
But you go with the flow and you try to make small changes as you can and hope they accept it along the way.
I know that Spelling Bee has, well, let's just say it pushes boundaries. Like
it really
you said.
Does.
It really does. And what's happening though is the overwhelming feeling is what people are walking out with is the overwhelming feeling of joy,
mm-hmm.
and they're being uplifted, and so kudos to you guys. I really want people in New York to listen to this who are like, oh yes, well this has, you know, a lesbian scene and we're gonna light somebody on fire and, you know, and they're okay.
It's like
sure.
No big deal.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I would,
yeah.
That's gonna open the season.
That's
our
right.
Inaugural show. When we know that, you know, that's not
mm-hmm.
something you could probably do here.
Right.
I have your 2018 season here. You're doing mm-hmm. Mousetrap, Butterflies Are Free, The Skin of Our Teeth, and Lost in Yonkers. Those are good
yes,
shows.
Absolutely. The nice thing is at this day and age here in Fairhope is that the community's gotten large enough where there are a lot of talented people out there that can direct, that can be a part of the show, and we don't want to have the same directors always coming back and directing show after show after show, because then the vision kind of gets really narrow. So this opens it up. So both of us directed this season. We're not directing next season. However, we are going to do a Christmas show next year I am working on now. It's going to be a radio play.
Nice.
Right now, it looks like it's going to be It's a Wonderful Life, but it's going to be done in the style of a radio broadcast from the 1940s. And it's going to be fun.
Cool. I see your directors are Timothy Guy for Mousetrap.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Jamie Shows for Butterflies Are Free. Is it John Thornton?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. For The Skin of Our Teeth, and Joe Fuselli for Lost in Yonkers.
Correct.
That's correct.
What do you think is the best part of being involved with smaller productions?
Being a part of a smaller production for me allows you the opportunity to experience a lot of the production and not necessarily get focused on one thing. Like I've done sound, I've done lights, I've done stage managing, and you know, when you have a smaller production, it's more of a tight-knit community, I feel, you know. But
it was exciting for me because it gave me a chance to not only direct and choreograph, but I designed the set and I designed the lighting and you know, and that you usually don't get a chance to do. You have a lighting designer, you have a set designer that comes in and just, this is what you're doing, and we work with them, and I block it around that, and so on. So it was a real creative experience.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you're doing things that you aren't normally doing, or
in a bigger theater,
or that mm-hmm. you don't do often. I mean, do you often work on designing sets and doing costumes and things like that on your shows?
Usually when I'm directing, I work along with the costume designer and the set designer and the lighting designer, tell them my vision for the show and what I want. They come to me, they sketch it all out, and I go, yes, that's wonderful, let's try this, you know, whatever. But in this, it's pretty much, you design it, we build it, and here are the lights, and do what you'd like. And as far as costumes, we've had wonderful costume people. I gave them my vision. I told them I wanted bright colors, I wanted this, I wanted that, and they came up with it all. It was wonderful.
So is it, with smaller productions, is it a chance to sort of get back in there and revisit that and strengthen those skills a little bit every now and then?
It brings me back to college.
Because
I majored in drama, and you know, we took the set design class and the lighting design class and all of that. So it's taken me back, and I'm really enjoying it. Really enjoying it.
And you went to college in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Okay, I have here San Diego State University.
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And did you like San Diego? Did you like going to school in San Diego?
Who wouldn't love going to school in San Diego? I mean, it was a while ago. We won't say how long ago, but back then, San Diego State was one of the top technical schools in theater around. So, I mean, we had sets that were built that they said, you won't see this on Broadway. I mean, they were unbelievable. Sure. And we had incredible professors, and I'm sure they still do. It was a good time. It was a great time to be there.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. John, I'm going to ask you this. I don't know if you have dramatic training. I did not go to school for theater. I'm just a theater fan and started writing and learned from seeing things in books and things like that. Did you go to school for theater?
Sean, I think we both went to the same school. I did not go to school for theater. It is something I grew to love. I went to school for business and marketing, and I grew to love theater. And, you know, I got involved with improv first, and then I think everything built from that, and that's what got me here, and then got me into directing and doing other things with the theater, too.
I definitely think people could benefit from having business training, being in the theater, and marketing training. I think that's so much about what we do for each show. I know that when David and I do our show, we've done it 7 times, and each time that we do it, it's like there comes a point in time where I'm like, okay, there is a play in here somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because you're so dealing with this ad and this contract, mm-hmm. and it's
the business aspect of show business,
right?
And none of us showers want to do the business part, but it's essential that you get that training, not only to move your career in a forward way, but also, you know, as a director, as a writer, as anything else, you have to deal with that.
Right.
And so it's essential, even though we don't want to do it. I just want to have fun and do the show part, you know, the creative part.
Exactly.
And then there's always that business stuff.
Right. Well, that's what I tell people when they ask me, how do you succeed in this? And I'm like, well, you can't really say that's not my job.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, you have to get in there and be willing to do everything,
mm-hmm.
if you need to. And you can't just say, oh, I'm the talent and I'm not, you know, you have to run your own career if you're a performer.
Oh,
right.
Especially today.
And there's a balance between the two. You've got to find that balance.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do, you know it and it works well for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. There is a formula there. And I guess all I can say is, when you find it, tell me what it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, some people have it down.
But you know what, though, Sean? It's always redefining it, because what worked yesterday may not work tomorrow.
But with technology and social media today
and
everything else, it changes daily. Hourly, minute by minute.
No kidding, right?
So
what do you two think is an important direction theater is taking right now overall?
Well, that's an interesting question.
Hmm. Theater in general or our theater?
No, theater in general.
General, oh.
I think you've talked a lot about the vision of Theater 98.
Right.
But you're both theater artists who are aware of what's going on in the United States and in the world.
Well, I think we've come to a time and place where you're allowed to be as creative and open as possible. Both politically, sexually, religiously, whatever it is. And I think that our patrons are open to it as well and are accepting it, except down in the South.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily,
I'm kidding.
Yes. Yeah, I'm just messing with you. But I think that's what's exciting. And also women in theater and women in the arts.
Mm.
You know, it's big for us. So I love where it's all going.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, and you also look at, you know, the success, like for Hamilton, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You're pulling in other racial views on stage. You're seeing different points of view now. And that, to me, is important when you start looking at, you know, what is being performed on the stage. Because if everybody continued to look through their own point of view. You have that narrow-minded focus. But now, all of a sudden, if you're seeing a show from this point of view and a show from this point of view, it opens your mind a lot. And I think that more people should do that. Before they judge something or judge somebody, they should look at different points of views. And
that's the thing, though. I wish there was more theater out there that did look at two different points of view. Something. I think you should write this now, Sean.
I think I did.
Yeah, okay, right. And not basically, I hate to put it in these words, but shove it down someone's throat that this is the way it is or it isn't. I'm not saying anything you've done. I'm just saying that I would like to see more of both points of view in some type of a play or in art, so that people could say, okay, well, I understand that, and I understand that.
So what you're saying is maybe a show that it starts out where you've got this piece of the show here with one point of view, mm-hmm. the second piece with the second point of view, and then in the third, you pull them together.
Possibly. Possibly. And I think that would help with so much of what's going on politically in this country,
right.
and with diversity, you know, and everything else. And I think that, I want to go home and write now.
Well, I was writing before we started this.
So. I walked in and he was working on a screenplay.
Oh, so. There we go. Yes. Yeah.
That's actually a very popular answer to this question, because I think that we're in such a divided time right now.
We
particularly
are.
Particularly in our country. And nobody wants to look at the other side.
Yeah.
With some objectivity. There's so many feelings attached to it. And to be able to have a piece of theater that just says, okay, take a breath, calm down, mm-hmm. and watch this.
Mm-hmm. And then you decide.
Exactly.
Kind of thing, yeah. And not, as I said, shove it down your throat one way or the other. Let's have, see, this point of view and this point of view, and then you decide.
Oh.
And it's okay which way you decide.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah,
yep.
Give them permission to be mm-hmm. okay with it. And I think I think it works both ways. In theater, you know, we have a tendency to be, known as being a little bit more liberal, a little bit more on the left. We need to see what the right is bringing to the table as well.
And not just what people think the right is bringing to the table.
Right.
You know, there's so much on both sides that are so important.
Oh, absolutely.
And, yeah, so, yeah.
Absolutely. Great answers. Hmm. Okay, so I think we touched on this a little bit before, but I want to get a little bit more into it. What should every theatrical artist, in your opinion, producer, director, actor, technician, be doing right now to be relevant and successful in the industry?
What should they be doing? That's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
I think they need to approach it mainly from the audience's perspective, because you know, you're telling a story. If you're an actor or a director or a writer or whatever, you're telling a story, and think about, okay, what is the audience going to gain out of this story? And if you're doing that and you're putting the details in to the story that makes sense and bring them, you know, into a certain time and place, then that formula should work.
Mm-hmm.
It should be, you know, and that's, it's hard to explain that, you know, without saying, you know, and I look at different movies and things that are out there as well too, and see, like, for example, to me, the Coen brothers is one of my favorite, you know, screen or movie writers, and when they tell their stories, they look at every single little detail and
sure.
pull it in. And you know, I guess you could say the same thing with Tennessee Williams in The Glass Menagerie.
Mm-hmm.
He was very detailed about that time and place, and put that into the story, and so it took you back to that moment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Both great examples of writers. And directors for the Coen brothers as well, who pay attention to the audience for each individual project.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's all about what's the tone I'm trying to set here, and how is that going to affect the audience? And I think that's important. And Robin, I'm going to have you answer this question, but I wanted to say, as a writer, you get to a point to where the script, that you start off with a very personal story. You eventually get to a point to where you've got to let it go with your personality and your own personal connection to it, and you have to start writing for the story and its effect on the audience. So I absolutely, completely agree with you. And Robin, I'll agree with you too. I'll find some way to agree with you.
Okay, I really don't know what to say. Actually, my son is a film writer and a director in Los Angeles, and we have discussions about this all the time because he's very much into, he does a lot of virtual reality, but he and I discuss how, you know, keeping it relative and what does it say to the audience and what did this character mean? We really get into, you know, the depths of each thing, but I just really agree with what y'all have been saying. Y'all, I sound like I'm from the South, don't I?
You're in the South.
I guess so. I am.
They say it a lot in New York, too.
Yes, I bet, I bet. Yeah, so, you know, I agree with you all.
Okay.
Yeah.
With y'all.
With y'all.
That's oh, my. Right. We're in the South.
Oh, my. it's come to that.
Is there anything new that you individually are working on that you wanted to talk about? Because we just went over your season, or you can elaborate on that as well for Theater 98 or whatever you want to say.
Well, I did mention the radio play that we're going to do next year. That's going to be interesting for me in the fact that it is not about the action on the stage. It's in the voice and how they say the lines, because they're going to be standing behind a microphone very similar to this one and delivering those lines. I want the audience to come in and to be able to close their eyes and say, am I listening to a radio program? The other thing about that is that I want a complete Foley table on the stage.
Oh, awesome.
With the sound effects created right there on the spot.
That's so
be
cool.
Wonderful.
So,
yeah, that'll be great. I want to be a part of that.
Oh, well.
Okay.
Are you going to set it in any particular time?
The 1940s.
So you're going to have 40s costumes?
40s costumes.
Oh, wow.
As a matter of fact, one thing that I guess I started the trend with on The Verge is the lobby, as you come into the theater, we decorated it as an expedition office for the journeys that the ladies took from the 1800s. And so I want the lobby to get you in that the downtown Christmas scene. I've got this vision. I want to do a glass wall and have like the department store windows in
That's
there.
Great.
I remember it.
I want to have cookies and punch over at the refreshment stand, and I want carolers outside as you're coming
wonderful.
In.
Well, there's nothing better than having the audience begin with the whole feel of the show as you're walking in.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
And he did an incredible job on The Verge. Just when you walked in the lobby, you were just taken into that whole time frame, and it was wonderful.
And we delivered clues in the lobby, too. Because that's such a difficult show for the audience to follow. I don't know if you've seen that show or not.
No.
It's a journey. It's all about language and words that I had never heard of before and pronunciations that the actresses that I had for that show did an amazing job of learning those words and using them as if they were in the time period. They started out in the 1880s or 1860s, I forgot, 1880s. Ended up in 1950s Cuba because they went into a time travel.
I'm going to have to read this.
Oh, it's wonderful.
For
it
sure,
was a wonderful show. And the setting was they were dropped off on a beach and they started this journey. They went through the jungles and went up a cliff and to the snowfields, and they encountered these different characters as they went. And each one of these characters was a gatekeeper to the next part of their journey. And then they discovered that they were going through time and ended up at this Cuban bar, and the three ladies and then one male who played all eight characters that they encountered. So it was...
He's wonderful. And he's in my show, too.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. He's playing Mitch Mahoney, so come see it.
Oh, wow. I love that character. I love Mitch Mahoney.
That's great.
I think that's so important to bring the audience into... You're creating a psychology for them as they're walking through the lobby. And, mm-hmm. and in this case, it's going to be outside too. If you have carolers outside,
right.
That's a great idea.
Which I don't know if you guys ever saw the original Broadway production of Spelling Bee, but did either of you see?
Uh-uh.
It played in the Circle in the Square Theater, and it's actually it's the theater next to the Gershwin Theater that's been housed Wicked since 2002 or whenever. But it. It did exactly that. I mean, you walked in and there was posters all over the place, all mm-hmm. over the lobby, all downstairs. I mean, it really brought you into mm-hmm. what you were going to see. And so that's, nice. I mean, I think that's so super smart. What about you, Rob? What are you working on?
You know, I don't have anything in the works right at the moment, but... except for what I think I'm going to go home and write, what we just talked about. But really nothing... right at the moment, but I'm sure something will come along.
Well, yeah. You're definitely going to keep us updated, right?
I will, definitely.
Something tells me that you, like you're going to say this, and then, like, by the end of the weekend, you're going to have 5 new projects.
Okay.
Right?
From your mouth to God's ears.
That's
there
how
you
it
go.
Works. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, before I ask you guys to give your social media information, do you want to do a speed round with me?
Ooh.
Okay.
That's kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it's really, really easy. And you know, basically I'm just going to ask you some questions and you answer as quickly as you can, okay?
Okay.
Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay.
Now I'm going to ask you a question and then I'm going to go to Robin and then John and then the next question, okay? I have to clarify that because some people are...
We're going to answer the same question.
Exactly right.
Okay.
Okay. So, favorite play?
25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
No.
Right answer.
That's next. Favorite play?
I would say Light in the Piazza.
Okay, cool.
What if I don't have a favorite play?
Do you have two favorite plays?
Well, right now I would say Glass Menagerie and On the Verge because of the last two plays I directed.
Exactly. There you go.
Yes.
That's... Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Perfect. Okay. Favorite musical? Did we already get it from you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, right now it's the 25th annual. No, my favorite musical is Wicked. Oh, I
love that musical.
I'm so in love with that show.
It's such a great show.
Yes.
Okay, John?
I will do the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling
Bee. Thank you, dear.
God, you're so loyal.
I love your loyalty.
Yes,
he's been
awesome.
Wonderful.
Okay, your favorite writer?
My goodness.
Yeah, I would say I really love Molière, but I'm going back.
Okay, that's fine.
You know, I'm so non-committal on this game right here. So.
You're okay.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I don't know who my favorite writer is. I think it all depends on the work, you know, because you can look at some Neil Simon stuff that's great and then look at some that's not so great. So, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. I pass.
You want to pass?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. Now, aside from the two of you, each other, your favorite director? You can't answer one or the other.
Oh, in theater altogether?
In theater altogether. If you can't think of theater, film is okay.
Oh, my. This is going to be a long... My son would come up with something immediately, and now, because of my age, I can't think. No.
Want me to tell you mine?
Yes.
Mike Nichols.
Oh, do you like
yes.
Mike Nichols?
Both
yes.
for theater and for film.
Yeah, he's wonderful. Oh, well, you had kind of mentioned the Coen brothers before.
That was going to be my answer here. So.
And I'm just so blank on everybody's name. So
I will give you two. The Coen brothers for me and also John Hughes. Those are my two favorite directors.
Oh, Good choices. Mm-hmm. Well, you guys know you're both going to like... This is now going to be your new 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
Eyes wide open. Okay, now I remember who my favorite
is. Oh, yeah, it was Steven Spielberg, man!
Now, do either of you have a mentor?
That's an interesting question. I use anybody that's willing to share their knowledge as a mentor. So I'm always looking and you know, I'll ask the question, mm-hmm. like, you know, tell me about this or tell me about that. So
Anyone that's teaching you? Most people that are teaching you?
Most people that are teaching me. I mean, again, it's not that I have an official, you know, I'm taking some acting classes. Gary Grubb's classes right now are the ones that I'm taking. And so I guess, you know, right now he would be my mentor. But, you know, tomorrow I may have someone else, you know.
You're not the first person who has answered that as, you know, with it being a fluid, you know, line of people.
Right.
A lot of people say I have different mentors for different facets of theater in my life. Singing, acting, you know. So that's actually a very popular answer.
Yeah, so many people, I don't have one particular mentor. It's kind of been a collaborative effort of many. I still thank and appreciate my original voice teacher, Sharon Currier in Santa Barbara. I even found her on Facebook recently and wrote to her and told her what an impact she had on my life and my career and how she helped me. All the teachers, I think everybody I come in contact with somehow mentors me. And kind of like what John was saying, it's you listen. Listening is so important. And you learn. And but I don't have one particular mentor.
Okay.
Yeah, so to speak. Yeah.
Cool. Well, those were excellent answers.
So that means we passed the lightning round.
Did we pass
it? Yeah.
It wasn't very fast, we didn't answer very quickly.
There have been people who have been slower.
Okay. Well, yes. I feel much better now because...
And blanked even more
so. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Why don't you go ahead and give our audience all your social media information, please?
Well, it would be theater98.org, and theater is T-H-E-A-T-R-E.
I was going to ask.
Mm-hmm. And you're more than welcome to go there and see the 2018 season. And there's a couple of other surprises for that have not been put on there yet, which obviously I've let the cat out of the bag for one of them. But it does look like we would have Kirsten Vangnes back again this year to do her mess show. And I don't know if you know who that is.
She's on Criminal Minds. She plays Penelope.
Penelope on Criminal Minds.
On Criminal Minds. Have you ever
she
seen
is on Criminal Minds, she has kind of like a funky 1940s look.
Yes. The big glasses and blonde hair. And yes. And
wow.
She wears real crazy fun
but
clothes.
She was here this past year and helped kick off our new seat fundraiser for the theater. So, you know, this time next year, everybody will be sitting in comfy new chairs. So.
Yes, you'll see one out in the lobby when you go out, Sean, and have a chance to sit in it.
And is the fundraiser still going on?
The seats are pretty much paid for, and we will be, once this show is over, these seats will come out, and the new ones will be installed.
And as far as a fundraiser for community theater, we're always doing a fundraiser.
Right, and people can go to theater98.org, with an R-E, uh-huh. and do you have a place where they can donate? On the website?
To be honest with you, I don't know if there is a specific donate button. If there is, please use it. If not, pick up the phone and call.
Or
write to us. Mm-hmm. Or send an email. Or go to Facebook. We have a Facebook page as well, too. Mm-hmm. And send a message. And typically, I'm one of three or four people who would answer the Facebook messages. So we'll get back to you immediately, I think. You know, that's probably the best way to go.
And they can send checks and...
Absolutely. And
cash, money orders,
cash,
Visa,
money.
Well,
whatever
you know,
you'd
exactly.
like.
Considering the age of this building, you know, our next fundraiser, I can't say what it's going to be specifically. We know we need new wiring in the building. Anything that we do fundraiser is to enhance the audience's experience here. So, you know, we'll look at things that would make it better. I'd love to have new LED lighting in here.
Sure.
And that could happen, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yes.
But because, you know, I couldn't have done On the Verge. We brought in LED lighting for that show because I had to take you to different places, like a jungle. I had green lighting, and then we were on the beach. We had white lighting, and, you know, when we were in the Cuban bar, it was red lighting. So I had to have the different colors here.
Using more than just a gel.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, we're a limited number of lights here, but the LED lighting, you can gradually go. You have, you know, those soft transitions.
And it has spots that move automatically, and, you know,
it's fabulous. And I have to say, I got a tour of the building from John when I first came in, and I have never seen a building and a theater so well respected and so organized. I mean, I went into the library and it's all just meticulously, beautifully organized, and then in your workroom and backstage. I mean, you guys have done a tremendous job with really paying attention to your theater here.
Thank you.
All of it. I encourage anyone who's listening to go to the website and really support this theater. I'm very impressed.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
That's very nice. We work hard, and we have
a lot of volunteers.
A lot of volunteers that help.
Are tirelessly committed, and you know, even from like doing the flower beds and the grass outside too.
Mm-hmm. Well, props to the volunteers.
Yes.
Love the volunteers.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, where would theater be without that?
Oh my gosh. I know, right? Sometimes I think that like 60 to 65% of the workforce is volunteers. And it's that shows that we should always have theater because people love it so much that they're willing to come in and usher and help with costumes and help build sets. And
serve wine
like
at intermission.
Exactly. Yeah. Work concessions and stuff. So I totally agree with that. So, anyways, on that note, I have to tell you that I have absolutely thoroughly enjoyed our interview, and I thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having us. It's coming to our little town, and we so enjoy having you.
Well, I come here a lot, and so every single time I come here, I'm going to try to see a show.
Okay, good.
Great.
I really am. I'm going to try because this has been amazing. It's so nice. So, okay. So, thanks again, you guys.
Thank you.
Awesome. Now, at the end of each show, I like to give shout outs to current productions worth a recommendation. On tonight's episode, I'd like to recommend an upcoming pair of shows being produced by the guests on my previous episode, Lily Riopel and Molly Clifford. And they are the co-artistic directors of the NYC production company Two-Headed Rep. Isn't that a fun name? I don't know. It sounds like a monster to me, but let me explain it to you. They are a repertory company that runs a show that is modern and current and new and written by a new playwright. And then they take an older show and they have a group of writers do an adaptation of it. So it's crazy. So, anyways, they are simultaneously running an updated translation of Miss Julie by three different authors writing for each individual character on a Google Doc. I mean, it's like one writes a line and sends it to the other one, and they write a line and they send it to the other one. Isn't that great? That's
technology.
Exactly.
Minute by minute.
I will say, me and my brother did that way back when, but we used pencil and paper.
It's creative. It's like I always thought, you know, I when I write with my musical writer, he lives in Chicago. We write back and forth with like instant message and email. And I thought, oh, wow, we are so on the cutting edge. And then I meet these two ladies. And it's like, oh, no, it's all being done on a Google Doc. And they're crazy. Kids these days, they're so young and doing that kind of thing. The new play is called Reno and Mall. And there are two different shows about workplaces and different break areas. It's kind of fun. It's being done in the style of repertory that does simultaneous productions back-to-back of different plays presenting similar themes so as to invoke comparisons, differences, discussions, and debate. I don't want to say too much more about the shows other than the fact that they're workplace dramas, but I will tell you that I've seen a few of these theater events where it's this style of presentation of repertory where you're seeing a modern and a classic and you're comparing and contrasting. And it's a really, really cool thing to see. Now, it can be a long day of theater or two nights of theater, but I encourage everyone to go out and do this. It's something that you should experience if you possibly can. Now, the shows run in repertory from November 4th to November 18th. You can visit www.twoheadedrep.com for tickets and information. That's two, T-W-O, headed, H-E-A-D-E-D, rep, R-E-P.com for tickets and information. So there you go. Give it a shot. And I'm going to go, and I think you should too if you're in the area. Well, folks, the proverbial 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. I'd like to thank my guest, the sensational John Robitaille and Robin Ann Page. Thank you again, you guys.
Thank you.
You were so amazing. Thank you. So great job. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket at facebook.com/yourprogramisyourticket. I'm on Twitter at programticket. The website is yourprogramisyourticket.com. There you go. That's easy. I'm on iTunes and SoundCloud. So you can rate me and write me a review, and you should subscribe. It's how I get our higher profile on those two different elements. Also, if you go to my YouTube page, you just look up The Program Is Your Ticket. You could see some footage of me interviewing some people backstage, people like Charles Bush and Matthew Broderick at the New York Innovative Theater Awards, which I did a couple of weeks ago. It was super fun. So, anyways, go there as well. Folks, take a little time to see a show this week, and don't forget to give a smaller show some love. There's a lot of great theater jobs out there. And until our next show, good night, theater people, and perfect.
Your program is your ticket.